We don't have a quorum yet, but I think we need to get started, so Representative Abler, if you want to start your bill, and then when the time comes, you can move it. But the time is not here yet, so that's right.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. I believe I'll be moving it for possible inclusion.
Great.
And I think you have two bills that are similar, so this will give some good depth. This is the fetal alcohol syndrome. Challenges are profound and very meaningful, and this bill will address some of the challenges of that. And just in the interest of keeping the conversation more interesting, I'll turn over to my expert witnesses, who will give you some details about actually some programming that's been very effective and the purpose behind the bill. So Dr. Dienhardt will first introduce his friend.
Good afternoon, Representative Huntley and other distinguished members of this committee. Thank you very much for allowing us to testify this afternoon. My name is Amos Dienhardt. I'm in the Department of Pediatrics and School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. In 1991, the State Department of Human Services issued a request for proposals for an intervention that could be used with women identified during pregnancy or shortly after pregnancy as substance users. And back then, the substances were alcohol, cocaine, crack cocaine, and heroin. Meth hadn't hit the streets yet. And our program has been funded at the University of Minnesota for Circle of Women since 1991. Ours is a sober parenting program that works at trying to make better parents out of the users who come to us from drug court, from child protection, from Project Child, and over the years now on self-referral. And the goal is to make better parents out of them in the hopes that they do not lose their children to foster care or have their parental rights terminated. We also use community resources to help them deal with their chemical and mental health issues. I do believe we are saving the state money if we can keep, if nothing else, but keeping kids out of foster care. That is a very expensive situation, and it's also clearly in the better interest of the child if the child can stay united with biological parents. I'm also here today representing two other programs, Project Harmony, which is a program funded for Meeker McLeod and Sibley counties, and the American Indian Family Center program. There are handouts on those two programs, and also going around the table now are a data set on our Circle of Women outcomes. This next year, we hope to be able to add a mental health, chemical health component to our program. My goal today is to make the case that we would ideally like to have our funding not only continue for the next biennium, but I am very eager to test the model that we have in place, a Circle of Women, in another part of the state. And I have spoken with Senator Lurie, and he is very interested in having this program cloned to his district. And I've spoken to the public health nursing directors and the child protection directors of those three counties, and all of them said the same thing to me. We have the need, but we do not have coordinated services. We would love to have your kind of program up here as a test for a couple of years to see if we can make a difference. I have brought with me today two women who are participants in our program, and then one of my staff who is going to read some letters of support from a couple of other of our participants who couldn't make it today. And I'm going to stop now in the interest of time and then field questions at the end of all of the presentations. And everyone who is speaking today has prepared statements, and those will be circulated. I apologize. I did not know that I was supposed to bring 75 copies. I apologize for that. My mistake. So I'm going to let Carla Evans take over now, and then we'll move the microphone over to Stephanie. And then Nick Masterson, who's up in the bleachers right now, will come down if there's time to read several other letters. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Carla Murray, and I'm a participant of a Circle of Women. I entered a Circle of Women 2 years ago. I had a pregnancy, a positive pregnancy for cocaine with my son, Devin. Sorry about that. They had
been brought on tape.
They had took custody of my son, and I was very eager to get my son back and to become sober. So I entered a circle of women. The program has been a lot of support for me. It's very helpful in showing me ways to stay sober and to do things that to keep being sober. I did write some up, but I feel like I can just say it off my head. Without the group and the support from the women and the feedback and the help that a circle of women gives me and the other women, I don't think that I would be strong enough to take on the things that go on. For me, it was hard to not go back to the things that I was used to because I didn't know anything else. And a circle of women helped me and showed me other things besides the drug use and the bad company that you keep. So just learning different things and knowing different ways to keep from doing that helped me a lot. My advocate has been a very big support for me and also a very good friend. And I think it's very important for other women to see that they're not the only ones. Because when you go through this, you look and see and think that you're the only one going through this and nobody can help or there's nothing that can help. And a circle of women was a lot of help. And it helped me to see that I could do better and that I am a good person beyond my past. And Devin is my testimony as far as getting my son back and having a healthy relationship with my children, being able to hold a job, having supportive housing, just a lot of things that they helped me with was very, very supportive to me. And I honestly know without that help that I wouldn't have been able to move further in my life and be a good mother to my son. With that, thank you.
Thank you. Was it Murray?
Carla Murray.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I want to just add, the structure of our program is that we have facilitators who are also advocates. All of them are trained as doulas, so that if a woman comes to the program while pregnant, she has some support system in place for her when she goes into labor and after labor. And we have group meetings every other week, and on alternate weeks, the facilitators visit the homes, videotape the mothers, playing with their children, use those videotapes as teaching tools so they can show the mothers where the mothers are doing a good job at responding and anticipating baby's cues, where they could do a better job. And they ask the mother to figure out what needs to be done better. That's not just dictating what should be, but using the videotape as evidence that the mother is succeeding. And when the mother leaves the program when the child is three, she takes the videotape with her as evidence of the successes that she's achieved during the course of her 3 years with us. Stephanie, you're on.
Hello, I'm Stephanie High, and I'm really honored to be here. This is really cool. Okay. I'm here on behalf of Circle of Women. A little bit about me is I am a homeowner, own my own house, got into methamphetamine. At the time, my children were 16, 12, and 1, and now they are 23, 20. 8, 5, and 2. And, I started out in the program because I was already through Project Child, and Child Protection, got my children back, and then it was like, what do I do now? You know, I can pass the UA, but can I maintain that? And all of a sudden, this program, I was at Project Child because I was showing women that you can turn your lives around. You don't have to, live your life of guilt and shame, because we do change by the grace of God. And so all of a sudden, I was a lady by the name of Patty. She came in and she told me about the group, and I thought, all right, I'm going to, you know, go there and check this out. And I was there, and I was just starting to go back into seeing my, who was now 2-year-old son, because I had lost him and thought I was unworthy. And my counselor, Brenda, she said, let's go for your son. Let's get him back. And I'm thinking, you know, they ain't going to give me him back, you know, because of what I did. And then through the program, I did my parenting classes, which are just so important to show that even though we are mothers, parenting classes are just, I don't know, it should be something for everyone to be assigned to leaving the hospital, just, you know, a 3-week program of, you know, how to be a parent. And I went, you know, I go there and we do that, and she brings, you know, I said, you know, are we going to court? You know, I can't afford a lawyer. She goes, represent yourself. You know, so I went there and she was with me, and needless to say, the judge said, oh, full physical and legal custody today, you know, and we left, and then it was like, now what do I do? Okay, so then I go to my Circle of Women program. Now it's to every other week. And, okay, the guidance and the resources the counselors give us are remarkable. Okay, when we need support outside of the meeting, they're there. They'll come to our houses. We're struggling. We can't make it to a meeting. They'll come to us. Which is real important, because they give us the power of we are special. We are special people. When we go to the meetings, we sit down, and we're there with women of all race, creed, religion, all with the same common denominator of, you know, we've lost our children. And we sit there and we break bread together. And we talk about our struggles. And they serve us. You know, we sit around, and then after that, we go to another room where we sit with just the women and talk about our struggles and our accomplishments and our weaknesses and our strengths, and our children are left with, I think they have one staff they pay for, and the other are volunteer women from the University of Minnesota that are trying to, you know, do stuff with children. So they're watching our children, so we don't have, you know, there's no issue there with that. And then what is the most important to me? I have now, I'm going on 6 years clean. I've been with the program. It's just phenomenal. Is when I'm there at the meeting and I have but I get so felt personally with it, is you have a mother coming in and she had just lost her baby. I always struggle with this part because I've been there. and the people there give her, we give her strength and faith that she can do it. 2 weeks later, she's coming back with a smile saying, I got a court date. You know, counselors are all, you know, ready for this court date. And then they're bringing their babies there because it's a safe place for a mother who has lost her children to come there, and the foster children or people will bring the children there and they can see their mama. And then that's every week. That's every week, and then 3-4 months down the road, they're bringing their baby every time because they have their baby back. Because we have the support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hyde.
Mr. Chair, just to respect the time, there's more letters we have. We could bring more people, but we thought we'd have two come just to kind of give you the flavor of what the program is doing, and I think I'll turn it back to questions after just about one more sentence. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're showing you is a program that works. It actually, in the more finance world, it actually contains costs by keeping people out of home placements and keeping the families together, which we know is a high goal. And the outcomes are much improved, and there's actually evidence behind it. So I hope at the end of the day that when the hard decisions come in April, that this is going to be good. So I think we'll stand for questions now. About specifics about the program, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Huntley. Representative Abler, can you tell us anything about the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome that the Department of Health created, which is a statewide program, and how that might be linked to your particular appeal?
I think I'll turn my witness.
Dr. Diner.
MOFAS came along after this initial funding. Back in 91, I mean, MOFAS, I think it was a product of Susan Carlson's efforts when her husband was governor.
Yeah.
And at this point, they're working very hard to train, to teach mothers not to drink while they're pregnant. We are getting the moms in our program after they have already been identified by the court system, by child protection, by Project Child, etc. They may come to us very pregnant and having used. We can't do much about that pregnancy. We can work with them so that if they get pregnant, again, they understand the downside of drinking or using drugs while pregnant. And I think we also are working hard to make sure that they understand having another child is fine. You do it when you're emotionally, socially, physically, financially able to handle it. And so we work with them if they want to get involved with family planning while they're with us. We will help them do that. If they don't, so be it. We will counsel them about drinking and not using drugs. And the dual presence is there throughout. So if a woman gets pregnant while she's with us, our staff are trained as doulas and can be of assistance to them from that perspective during the pregnancy.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if that answers your question, but these are really two kind of separate programs with different aims.
Yes, thank you, sir. And Representative Huntley, as I recall, when the department presented, they had at least a page probably that was indicative of what the Department of Health is doing, maybe not directly with this organization, but I know I did ask for some information as to grants that were going to counties, so maybe that's the statewide program, and I don't know if you know more about it than I do, but I'll research a bit.
We can make sure that you get that information.
Thank you.
Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the testimony. It is amazing that these little people come into the world with no operating instructions, you know, when we're all sent home from the hospital at them. I have questions about the program, and that is, do you have a relationship with the different clinics in the area? I hate to admit this out loud, but I work as a nurse practitioner, and I have never heard of this program. And I
work Where do you work as a nurse practitioner?
I work at Park Nicollet.
Where?
Park Nicollet in Brooklyn Center.
We are well known at Community University Healthcare Center, where we get many of our referrals. We are well known at Hennepin County Medical Center, where a lot of these high-risk moms deliver. And we're well known over at Fairview University Medical Center, where, again, a lot of high-risk moms deliver. One of the things that has held us back in terms of how wide we can go, we use taxi cabs to bring moms to group and take them back home again. The farther out they live, the bigger the bill, the fewer rides we can support, because we have had for years now a fixed budget that in the last 3 years our budget has not increased $1. Inflation has eroded the budget, but we haven't gotten any new money. So we are always struggling. How many cabs can we afford? And if we have more funding, we will go to St. Paul and we'll go out into the suburbs also.
Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Abler, maybe you can help me with this. I'm just kind of wondering how this kind of appropriation fits into the scheme of things, and Representative Erickson kind of touched on it. Do we usually do this kind of, you know, I love the, you know, the program sounds wonderful and the testimony was terrific, but I just wonder as a matter of how we do our budget, if we pull, you know, why we pull out categories or a few programs and say let's fund this and let's fund that instead of having the Commissioner of Human Services make those decisions. You know, I feel like maybe we're micromanaging things if we do this. And I guess a related question is how has the funding for these programs or this program worked up till this point?
Representative Abler.
If you know me, I'm comfortable micromanaging the department. So at least on certain macro points, which I consider to be one of those. But to the specific, I'll send it back to my witness who actually can give you the specific answer about their funding and how they've been funded.
Dr. Diner.
Please restate the question you'd like me to try to answer.
Explain your funding you have in mind.
The funding we have now, we have been funded continuously since 1991. Every 2 or 3 years, we've written a new application to the Department of Human Services and Circle of Women. And I'm only speaking about Circle of Women. I do not know about these other two projects that I'm here representing today, how far back their funding goes. But ours has gone from day one, and it's been roughly the same dollar every year. And 1 year we only got $150,000 instead of $200,000. And we had to make do somehow. So we've managed to keep the program going. But inflation keeps eroding what we're trying to do. And our goal has been first to address substance use so that fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol effect don't arise. And so many of our women come already pregnant or having just delivered. That pregnancy, we can only help them be better mothers and keep those kids. For the next pregnancy, when it happens, we can have some impact on usage and non-usage during pregnancy. Now, I don't know if that answers your question about the budget, but our budget has funded facilitators, the group meetings, the taxi cabs, the infrastructure, the facilitator salaries, etc.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you for that answer. Yeah, I'm not questioning what you do with the money. I'm just kind of wondering on the other side where the money is coming from. And it sounds like you're telling me it's come through the Department of Human Services in the past.
Yes, and it has been state money that has come through the Department of Human Services.
Okay, and then what this bill is trying to do is pull it out separately as an appropriation, or at least earmark a category and I note that it's... the bill has it becoming part of the base appropriation, so it's kind of saying, you know, from now in perpetuity, we're going to make sure that the Department of Human Services picks this one. Is that right?
Representative Abelman, I don't know the workings of the legislature that well to be able to answer that question. It would be wonderful if it could be in perpetuity, but I don't know that any much of life is in perpetuity.
Why don't we have John Walls try to clarify this for us?
Mr. Chair, I was speaking with a couple of gentlemen in the audience from the department. There is a base in the department's budget for these three programs of roughly about $400,000 a year, of which the university receives $225,000, about $62,000 to the Meeker, and about $105,000 to the American Indian Center. I believe the bill seeks to increase that appropriation, although the appropriation is currently blank, but there is an ongoing $400,000 a year for these three programs.
And Representative Liebling, the legislative auditor did do a study of the Department of Human Services and how they oversee grants, and they were subject to a certain amount of criticism. So that is something we have to pay attention to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
We're not here today criticizing. We're just here pointing out a wonderful program, saying let's do more of this thing that actually works. So there's no criticism to mind.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to plead kind of the naivete of a freshman here for a moment. I helped found the St. Cloud Area Human Services Council some time ago, and as I look at these kinds of programs, I don't disparage the programs themselves, but number one, I think in terms of this committee trying to deal with funding issues in the health and human services area for the whole state, and there has to be this issue of fetal alcohol syndrome, not just here, but elsewhere. And how are we addressing that statewide? So that's one question I've got. Another thought is coming back to the legislature regularly and constantly begging, if you will, for operating funds seems like a rather inefficient approach to dealing with this kind of ongoing need. So building off of the previous two questioners' comments, have we ever looked at helping a matching grant approach to a foundation approach, an endowment or something that would provide lasting funding for these kinds of things, a public-private partnership approach where you'd get private sector contributors to a state grant, matching and put together something that's got some lasting funding. It seems to me we need to be thinking a little more long-term here instead of just, every year coming back for more, every 2 years coming back for more. Maybe somebody can enlighten me about that, but it doesn't seem like a very good approach.
Well, Representative Gottwald, all I can say is that sometimes we start these programs to see if they work, and then it moves into a bigger base that people and can compete for from, you know, around the state. And maybe we ought to look at that in this case. We obviously have some programs that are working very well. Maybe we ought to put more money in the pot so that people in other parts of the state could also compete for the, those dollars.
Representative Huntley, Chairman Huntley, I caught Representative Avery's ear about 5 years ago when I testified and made the comment that I thought we could save the state money if we could clone this program and move it around the state. I wishing that there were the dollars to try that. And it's consistent with what Representative Gutwald just said about looking beyond the Twin Cities to programs in other parts of the state, localizing the resources that exist in those areas, bringing them together in the same kind of format that we've got, and letting the local area do exactly what we're doing with our sort of oversight at first to get them started. Mm-hmm. And we've got the track record at this point and experience. Other areas of the state could use the services. They just don't know how to get things off the ground.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee already asked my questions.
Oh, okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Witnesses. I assume that most of the women that are being served by this are low income and might potentially be on medical assistance. Is that correct?
Yes.
I think we ought to continue exploring what the discussion we just had about looking for ongoing sources of funding to replicate these sort of things elsewhere. And if they're on medical assistance, we ought to be able to potentially, you know, earn federal dollars to help in the support of that, and particularly for the women who are involved in court oversight, there may be some opportunities there related to, you know, accessing treatment plans that are court ordered, that sort of thing. And we might want to explore some different approaches to that, because I do think when we have successful models and we know there are hundreds of other families who could benefit from similar things, it's really, I think, our obligation to try and figure out how to bring them to other areas while nurturing the pilots.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Since you're out of time for this topic, and I appreciate the attention, it's too bad that we don't have what is called a dynamic fiscal note, as opposed to the standard one where this would cost $400,000. But, you know, the out-of-home placements and all the peripheral costs that we know that we save, and we'll have many similar challenges in the healthcare world. If we know if we did this prevention, it's going to save money 5 years out, but we can't capture it today. I believe this is one of those cases. But I thank you for your attention today.
Well, Representative Abler, it's probably time to call the meeting to order. And Representative Abler moves the approval of the minutes. Okay. It gets you going on a good roll here.
Yeah, that's right. That's my motion.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We've adopted the minutes. And now, Representative Abler, if you'd like to move your bill.
Consent calendar, Mr. Chair? For possible inclusion, I'd like to move the bill.
Okay, the bill's been moved for possible inclusion. Any discussion? Representative Gottwald.
One other related question, Mr. Chair. This MOFAS, that was supposed to create a statewide system, I'm wondering if we can get a report at some point from them on this issue and whether or not there's a statewide system envisioned.
Well, there's people from the Department of...
Maybe someone from the department could speak to that.
But we'll ask them to get us a report on the outcomes of the current program.
MOFAS has almost a singular objective, and that is to get women not to drink during pregnancy. The parenting piece that we're working on, I mean, those things are not really... I'm on the MOFAS advisory committee. I sit there, and I applaud what they're doing. But we have different missions to one to a degree.
Unless there's an objection, the bill will be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
And there's some more letters that I'll pass out.
And thank you, Dr. Deinert, and the
thank you all very
women
much.
That testified. They did an excellent job.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so now we go. next, we have House File 383 with Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to keep our members from our side of the aisle in line.
I'll
sharing his resume.
He may have to have a signed seating. Representative Slawick, do you want to move your bill first?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to move House File 383 be included for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Health and Human Services Finance Bill.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, today we have a bill before us about the Mothers First program. You've just heard about parenting and a program that takes care of moms and kids after babies are born, and this is a Ramsey County bill that talks more about ensuring babies are born without traces of drugs in their systems to avoid the costs associated with health care treatment for the mom and for the child. This bill today I will have Commissioner Tony Carter from Ramsey County testifying in this, and I also have a mom, Lori Markey, that will also be talking. I'm going to make a brief comment about the conversation since it's out on the table. Is, you know, I served on this committee when I was a freshman. I was vice chair of Health and Human Services, and I was surprised at how things are funded, too. I have a United Way background, and that the state is doing all these grants. These programs kind of like United Way and not coordinated was surprising to me, but this is the culture here. So that being said, this program was funded through the state and then was cut in the 2003 cuts. It has then had some federal funding, but now they would like it, and when Commissioner Carter can explain this more thoroughly, it needs to be funded back through the state. So we really do need your consideration today, and she'll talk further about the financing part of this. This program serves an average of 150 families per year. 80% of the babies are born drug-free, and the annual cost of the service per family is just under $5,000. The cost savings, and that's something Representative Abler talked about, for this program of a baby born without traces of drugs, is $48,000 to $150,000 in neonatal intensive care, which is shared by the federal and state governments, and $11,042 for annually in child protection services. So the fact that the baby's born without drugs in their system. But we're asking for $450,000. Assuming the low end of the range of neonatal care, if 18 of the 120 babies annually are born without drugs, would now be born with toxins. So it's really a cost savings on the front end. And with that, I'd like to ask Commissioner Carter for her testimony.
Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chair Huntley. And representatives, I appreciate the opportunity to be here to share with you some information about a program that we know and have observed and shown to you does work. As Representative Slawick has said, you have provided funding for this program in the past through the Department of Human Services. You provided us funding from a federal chemical dependency fund through 2005, and we're very, very thankful that you did that. It assisted us to run this very important program, but the federal government then indicated to you that those funds were to be used only for mothers after they entered chemical dependency treatment. Well, it has been our experience that while that service clearly is needed, not being able to serve these mothers ahead of their entering chemical dependency treatment only delays our engagement with these mothers to be for several months. And in essence, each additional month of drug use makes it more difficult for them to move away from chemicals. Now, after that, the State Department of Human Services has provided us with a grant award to expand services. But again, after a mother enters treatment. Once again, we're really thankful, but it still leaves us struggling and trying to figure out how to maintain the important component of the Mother's First program that emphasizes they're coming to us and engaging before they enter chemical dependency treatment on their own without a court order. The program really is built upon that sort of voluntary participation by mothers early. If we're going to have healthy babies, then it is necessary for us to address the needs of those mothers first. These women come to us from mandated reporters, such as doctors and social workers and community organizations, community agencies, as well as county child protection workers. However, many of these women also come to us because they have heard that Mothers First works. They have friends or know of neighbors who have gone through the program and have been successful, many without treatment. The engagement early includes home visits, support and education groups, and connecting these women with the community organizations around them that can provide support to them right where they are living in an encouraging and supportive environment. Entering treatment, as some do, on a voluntary basis versus a court commitment also, for those who enter treatment, leads to better outcomes for these mothers and for their children. Beyond the statistics of babies that are born without toxins that Representative Slawick shared with you, there are other strong indicators of the success of this program. I'd like to share a few with you. Women who have delivered their babies and are essentially done with the core services of Mothers First continue to come back, and they participate in groups. That is where the mentoring occurs. They are talking with other women about their experiences, about how they achieved a sober lifestyle. Some with treatment, many without treatment, and how they're successfully now taking care of their children. These women also come back and they visit with other women and become mentors to those women. Some come back and achieve assistance with struggles of life that they are going through, for which they need some short-term support. Once again, this program works. The concern is that the funding that is available to us today only allows us to work with mothers after they enter treatment. We want the ability to address the needs of these mothers first, voluntarily, ahead of time, allowing many to achieve success even without treatment. Thank you.
Commissioner Carter? Also, for the record, if you could please state your name and title, that would be great.
I'm Tony Carter, Ramsey County Commissioner, District 4.
Thank you. Ms. Markey?
Yes, hi. My name is Lori Markey. I'm a former Mothers First Program participant. I want to first address the notion of waiting until a pregnant woman enters treatment to be able to contact them and start working with them. The problem that I see with that whole concept is that many women won't make it to treatment to get clean without Mothers First being involved. Myself personally, and just to give you a little bit of background information, when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, who's now she'll be 5 in July, I was rushed into emergency surgery because of internal bleeding due to heavy cocaine use. That's how I found out I was pregnant. I was so off the hook that I couldn't see straight or think straight, or for myself for that matter, and it was the Ramsey County Mothers First and my affiliation with them when they came to me and said, look, you have two choices, Anoka State Hospital for a year or go into treatment voluntarily for an extended inpatient treatment. Obviously, I chose the inpatient treatment. But a lot of people have been through treatment, and I had been through treatment many, many, many times. My last treatment was my 5th. And a lot of people, a lot of women, a lot of pregnant women go through treatment and aren't successful going that route. So that leaves them open to, okay, who's helping them, you know, guide them? Where do they go? The ones who treatment just isn't going to work for. And what about the ones who need something more like an extended care treatment like what I had? I was in treatment. I was originally signed up for 60 days, and I did 78 because when I left, I didn't have a safe place to go. Mothers First made sure that I was able to stay where I was at until I could find a safe place for me and my unborn child to go while waiting for delivery and waiting to get into some place that was going to be safe for us to be so I could continue my sobriety. I knew being out on my own and being out in the street wasn't going to do it. The kinds of behaviors and thinking patterns that saved my life as a child got me using as an adult and kept me that way. And these were things that I spent my whole life learning. Weren't going to be unlearned in a 10-day spin dry inpatient treatment were something that I needed extensive help and monitoring and support to learn how to undo what had been done. And, you know, unfortunately, the healthcare programs and Rule 25 aren't readily funding, especially for first-time treatment for people, for any people. They're not funding extended stay inpatient treatments. They're funding, like I said, what we refer to as a 10-day spin dry, which really does nothing but get you clean, but gives you no support or knowledge on how to stay that way. And Mothers First, at least for me, when they had the ability to, the financial resources to begin working with me to learn who I was and the kinds of things that I was doing to continue my using, you know, were able to identify that I needed that and made sure that I got it. I can't tell you where I would be at right now if it weren't for Mothers First, but I can tell you where I am at now. With their help, I am about to get an associate degree with a better than 3.5 GPA. I was recently inducted into the Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society. I am assistant, what do they call that, assistant president for the photography club. I am showing my photography. As a matter of fact, I have my second group art show coming up this weekend. I'm showing my work. I mean, I'm putting myself out there for the public to view, for the public to criticize, something I never would have even imagined I was capable of doing, much less attending college, getting a degree, being successful, speaking out on the issues in venues like this, going to treatment centers, trying to be a pillar to the recovering community. I hope to someday have a PhD in psychology and chemical dependency counseling. My children are healthy. I used with my daughter until I was almost 6 months when I finally got into treatment. And thankfully, because I was able to get clean, she was born clean and healthy. She's a very smart young girl who is very strong-willed and very independent. Like most four-year-olds, she's been moved she goes to I also have the benefit of being able to have her in a high-end quality child care facility that was very open and respectful and encouraging of the fact that I had concerns because of my using while pregnant with her. So, you know, they constantly watched and monitored but never criticized anything that she was doing, and informing me and giving me, along with Mothers First, continued association that I had with their public health nurse to make sure that that she was healthy and that she was doing okay. And she has actually been moved when she first started in the infant room at her daycare. She was moved to the toddler room early. And then she was moved from the toddler room to the preschool room early because she was so smart that she was getting into trouble. Surprise, during this time, I had also lost custody of my my now 15-year-old son. With the help and support that I got from Mothers First and the support of housing where we were living, I got him back. The way it happened was kind of funny. I didn't want to disrupt his education any more than need be. So I wanted to wait. It was February. I wanted to wait until the school year got finished before he came home. And the judge ordered, because I had all these services and was doing so well, she ordered the immediate return of my son to me. It was a Wednesday. She said, "You have till Friday to get it done." And man, I was scared. I was scared. And coming home, he was very angry. And so I got the continued support from Mothers First that way. I'm like, what do I do? You know, he's so mad at me. He's so angry and hurt and distrustful. And, you know, he should just know that I'm okay. You know, and, you know, I got the support and encouragement from everybody that I was involved with. To go to therapy, to get him into therapy and to get me into therapy, and we've done all that. And now I'm on my own. I'm on my own, and I live in a great artist co-op with supportive and encouraging people, and I still go back to supportive housing, and I still go back to Mothers First, and I still attend meetings, and I've got a great foundation for my continued recovery and to be able to help others coming into recovery and to help navigate those things, you know, when we have a child who is born to us with symptoms of withdrawal. You know, my daughter was healthy, but she did have those symptoms, and we did have some issues to tackle. Being reunited with older children who are angry and distrustful, and how to navigate through all those issues and how to help them recover from our using, I think is a critical piece that Mothers First also helped to incorporate my son into my program with them, which was really beneficial to us. And I'd like to see this program continue. I think it's vital, and I think it's important, their work with us and supportive housing. I mean, it can't be matched.
Thank you, Ms. Markey, for your testimony. We do have a question, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. One question for the testifiers and maybe one for the committee. And again, I'll plead the freshman piece on that. But how much is the county putting into this program? I mean, it's a Ramsey County-specific program. How much is the county putting into this? You said 150 families, $450,000, so you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of under $4,000 per family.
About $5,000 per family. The loss has been $450,000 since 2005. And so I have staff here who can more specifically address that. But the county has been backfilling with county dollars for that loss.
Okay. So they're putting $5,000 per family in.
Dave Haley is here from Ramsey County Human Services, and I'd ask you to more specifically address it.
If you could state your name and title for the record.
Dave Haley, Ramsey County Human Services, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald. When the program, when we got the $450,000 from the state, we were putting in $215,000, so it was between $650,000 and $700,000 was the operating cost of the program. The county is, on a temporary basis, stepped in to provide the funding to keep it going, but we're unable to be unable to do that on an ongoing basis. So the board is still committed to putting in the $215,000. To support the program, but can't go beyond that at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gottwald.
The other question, I can't possibly disparage this program. It sounds wonderful, but I question how we're funding these things. And the other point too, I think we're trying to solve problems that are statewide. Dollars that the state is spending ought to be benefiting more than just Ramsey County. I mean, I'd love to see this kind of thing elsewhere in the state of Minnesota, and maybe that's beyond our ability to pay this time around, but we're only funding, and I don't mean only, but we're funding a program in St. Paul, and many of us represent many other parts of the state that have similar needs. So that might be a question about funding. Shouldn't state dollars go for statewide benefit?
And, Representative Gottwald, I think as we move forward in the process and work on putting together an omnibus bill, we can have those discussions on what approach we need to take. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I kind of have the opposite question from Representative Gottwald. I was wondering, in the last bill that we were hearing, we had a request for an appropriation kind of in perpetuity, and this one is only 1 year. So I'm wondering, why are you only asking for 1 year? And I just want to comment, too, it doesn't trouble me at all that this is just Ramsey County. I mean, we do plenty of funding for this or that place. So, you know, I want to say that I really appreciate the testimony. It does sound like a great program, but I'm just kind of curious about why the request is structured in this way.
I would say that we certainly want to accept your advice and direction that it could more appropriately be a multi-year funding request. I'm not certain either why you structured it.
We also have one other person I'd like to testify to this bill. Are you done, Representative Lee?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Mary Hartman. And if you could state your name for the record.
My name is Mary Hartman. I'm the founder and executive director of New Foundations. We're a supportive housing program in St. Paul for families in recovery from addiction. And I'm also on the legislative task force to end homelessness in 10 years. We've got a few more years left. I just want to, first of all, thank you for creating Mothers First, just like you created Project Child in Hennepin County. And you know why you did it? I don't know. For those people who were around 12 years ago, this was an alternative to the proposal by some legislators that who were saying, golly, there's a lot of crack babies showing up here. So we got mandated to reporters. The minute they find one, put the woman in jail until she gives birth. And I'm not kidding. That was the thinking back then. And those of you who were here had the courage to say that's really kind of wrong. But what can we do to help? So we've been around, New Foundations has been around for 13 years. 10 years ago, Mothers First and New Foundations wrote a joint proposal to HUD to provide supportive housing with services to mothers who were homeless, who were in recovery. We got $680,000 for 3 years, and we had to have a little bit of a different partnership because Ramsey County was concerned that it was only a three-year grant, and what if they hired somebody and they have to lay them off. So New Foundations put the staff together, and we've been partners for the last 10 years. And I have to say that we've had 92 Mothers First families come through our supportive housing program. They come ready to do the work. They come ready to receive their children. Our program is built on relationships, our supportive housing program. And that's how you can help people get to the point where they can get five. We've got people who've gotten five kids back. We had a building. But I have to say that without Mothers First doing it up front, it's not going to work. Because we build our program on relationships and on trust with our families. If you don't get to the mom before there's even a decision to go to treatment, and you can't have that relationship, then you're going to lose a whole lot of people. 92 families in the last 10 years, 81 of them are living successfully, and I must say I'm very proud to say that Lori Markey was part of our community for 3 years?
3 years.
Lori is one example. Lori came from Mothers First. When people first meet Mothers First and Mothers First finds out they need a place to stay, we get a call. And we can all prepare for the time when mom is coming and how to get the kids back and how to work together. And the visiting nurse and the social service person and the team meetings that we can have with the mom and the team for Mothers First, they're the only organization, the only people that work with us that don't drop and run. Because they stay with us and they stay with the family, and we can do together what we couldn't do by ourselves. So I want to thank you for creating this program in the first place and sustaining it, and please ask you that you don't lop off the most critical part of the program, which is the initial relationship building, the initial self-esteem building, so that the mom can really make a decision on her own to deliver a healthy baby. And then to move into self-awareness, parenting skills improvement, employment, education, thank you very much. And you're right, kids don't come with instructions. I got three myself. I'm still reading the book. But I have to say that, let me just say, and I'll be done, that without this program, I believe that 92 families in Ramsey County wouldn't have made it. So thank you very much. I'm available for questions if you have any, or if you want me to leave, I'm available to do.
Thank you, Ms. Hartman. We don't want you to leave. Are there any questions for any of the testifiers?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slava.
I do have some closing comments.
Please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, Lori Marquis asked me to pass out a postcard about her show. Is that okay, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
Okay. The page could distribute these. I sure appreciate it. And I hope if you get a chance, I'm not sure everybody's doing this weekend, but if you can get there, I think it would be great. And congratulations. I think that that's a big step. Also, I have a 15-year-old son, too, and God bless you, because, you know, they're hard to deal with. And as
he's got a big piece of in the show as well.
Oh, he does. So he's got a piece in the show, too. So, good. Oh, well, interesting.
It's about fighting addiction and all that.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. So you we'll be look forward to hopefully seeing this. And thank you for coming out. And members and Mr. Chair, this committee is going to struggle with funding decisions. We're going to struggle with statewide versus local decisions, sort of history and custom and usage. We do these kind of grants, and particularly in our most populated counties like Hennepin and Ramsey counties, it becomes more important. Commissioner Carter and I had a conversation about the $450,000, and she asked me if we could say we screwed up, and so I said, sure, we can say that. We screwed up. We need $900,000, okay? I mean, that would only fund it for a year, and we do need, and here at the legislature, you know, we do biennial appropriations. One suggestion would be maybe the Representative Abler and I could talk about making some kind of compromise, or if you're funding all these in a particular area. But I think it's very important we look at the full appropriation and what's on the table. Typically, we don't look at strategic funding. As you know, it's a two-year cycle here at the legislature. We're all up for election, maybe a different legislature next time, and we typically don't bind their hands with anything more than 2 years. So that is why we do our appropriations on a two-year cycle, and would certainly appreciate your consideration. I want to thank the testifiers for coming, and committee members, thanks for your consideration.
Thank you.
Representative Slavik, do you want to make an amendment to that point? Or?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members, if I could ask the staff for help on this, Ms. Lemire, if it would be what on line 1.7 to strike $450,000 and to insert $900,000. Would that be correct? I'm just being a chair, so I usually ask the staff to read it back. I know I can't do that from here.
Representative Slavik moves for an oral amendment on 1.7 to strike $450,000 and to put $900,000. Representative Bunn?
Chair and Representative Slavik, didn't you also want to alter the language regarding biennium 08-09 rather than fiscal year 08?
You are correct.
Yep.
Let's see what the best language on that would be. $900,000 is appropriated in, do we call it the biennium? Or I'm not sure exactly the language.
Representative Slavik, I think just including in fiscal year 2008 and 2009.
In 2009, okay. So, thank you for bringing that up. The amendment would read 1.7, strike $450,000, insert $900,000 as appropriate in fiscal years 2008, and insert and 2009.
Correct. Any discussion from the committee on the amendment? None being so, all those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Chair? I don't think, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I know you're in the middle of the vote, but I'm sitting here listening to the smart people, and I think the amendment is incorrect. I agree with the discussion that they're having, and you don't know what they're having because you haven't been listening.
Okay. Mr. Walton, if you... I won't
say that. Mr. Chair, if I understand correctly that they want $450,000 a year, I would just change the bill to read $450,000 is appropriated in fiscal year 2008 to fund the Ramsey County to Ramsey County for the Mother's Purse Program. This amount becomes the annual base for this program, or something to that effect. Maybe Health Research could help me out there. But if it becomes an annual base, it would continue in perpetuity.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue that the way that the amendment is right now, it sounds like, it reads, it will read like you're asking for $900,000 this year, $900,000 next year.
Sure.
And so the language is incorrect. And so I know you don't want to use the word base because we haven't had that discussion, and that's not what the bill says. And so it might need to just say $450,000 is appropriated in fiscal year 2008, and $450,000 is appropriated for 2009, and then the rest of the language.
Representative Slodwick, would you like to adopt that language for your amendment?
I would adopt that. I would ask, is everybody in agreement and that should work, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the intention.
And just a comment so people know, this is being held over for possible inclusion.
Exactly.
And whenever it shows up, it won't be as a standalone bill. It'll be part of the Huntley Amendment to House File something. And then whatever it gets will be properly dealt with by staff. As long as you get the intent clear of what you're asking for, that's the most important thing.
Exactly. So, yes. Do you want me to read that, Mr. Chair? Or
currently, the amendment would be that $450,000 is appropriated in fiscal years 2008, and $450,000 is appropriated in fiscal year 2009 from the general fund.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Walker, for clarifying that.
Any discussion on the oral amendment? None being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. And we'll move the bill for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill.
So thank you.
Thank you to the testifiers, and thank you, Representative Slavik.
Thank you.
Representative Fritz moves her bill, House File 760, for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill.
Correct. Thank you, Chairman Hosh, and thank you, members, for having us before you this afternoon for House File 760. This bill is an appropriation of money for the Remembering with Dignity Project. In 1997, we received the first state grant of $200,000 for Remembering with Dignity. This was money used to place 1,165 simple and honorable granite headstones on the graves of Faribault and Wilmer State Hospital residents, each bearing the person's full name and dates of birth and death. The West Cemetery in Faribault was completed. There are a number of cemeteries in our state institutions around the state that we continue to work on. And I have with me today some testifiers who could testify and talk about their loved ones. Who, my left here, is one of the founding members of Remembering with Dignity, Gloria Steinbring. And I have Manny Steinman and Earl Karsikas. A family member that is buried in the Hastings State Hospital Cemetery. And next to me is Jim Fassett Carmen, who is with ACT, Advocating Change Together, an organizer for Remembering with Dignity. And I would like to turn it over to them for some testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gloria.
If you could state your name for the record, please.
I'm Gloria Steinbring. I'm a South African. I advocate for people who can advocate for themselves. I'm here today to testify on Remembering with Dignity. My husband was in four state institutions. If he would have died in one of the institutions, he would have a number. But today he's buried in Coon Rapids with his full name. And I would like to see this happen at all the state hospitals where people would have their names and not numbers. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbring, and thank you for your testimony.
Go ahead, Manny.
State
your name.
My name is Manny Steinman. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah. I used to live down in the state institution down where Patty used to work at, you know, at the state institution, and she was one of my nurses down there. Just when I was down there living, and I lived down there from 1960 to 1968, and I used to live right next, almost about, maybe about a block and a half from the East Side Cemetery down in Faribault, and I didn't know I was that close until Jim pointed that out to me, and I was real grateful to see that. And I moved up here, the better my life, and for me to be a better person and accomplish the goals that I needed. And I've been with Remember with Dignity for just shy of 4 years. And so I came to be a part of this to help the agency along as the best of my ability. And I'm very grateful to be with an organization that cares about individuals, and also I like to see people, are no longer with us, have a grave marker or a gravestone put on their grave instead of a number. And that way, whoever's our loved ones who would like to go see them at the gravesite, whoever. And I appreciate if you can help us out. That'd be a big help for all of us. And also my friend Patty.
Thank you, Mr. Steinman.
My name is Earl Karsakis. My grandfather was Jacob Karsakis, and he's buried in the Hastings Asylum Cemetery. I didn't know that until a little over a year ago. I was sitting at a friend's house in Hastings, and he looked up my name on the internet, and along with finding my name, he found my grandfather's name and where he was buried, and this came as a total surprise to me. Nobody in my family knew anything about what had become of him. He was committed in 1910, and he died in 1921. And I was sitting a little over a mile from where he's buried and three blocks from where he was institutionalized at the Hastings State Asylum. At the time I learned this, I just really strongly felt that there was some good reason why I was sitting where I was at the time I learned it. But my grandfather, I did some digging, and I found out how he ended up there. He traveled to Washington, D.C. in an effort to see the president, because he had apparently been arrested for something that he felt that he was falsely accused of, and he was then again arrested trying to get into the White House. And he was then later committed to a state institution. And this all occurred 1 month before my dad was born. My dad never knew my grandfather and never even knew what had become of him. Nobody in my family knew anything about it when I learned this. He was taken from his family and taken from children who needed him as a father. And then he was, I can only guess what went through my grandmother's mind at the time. I'm guessing that she really didn't even know what society pressures might have been back in 1910. But my grandfather was eventually forgotten by his family. He was then forgotten by the state. The cemetery in Hastings currently has four grave markers in it, in a cemetery with 901 people buried there. Thanks to Remembering with Dignity, my grandfather is one of those who now has a grave marker there. This was put in last summer. I felt extremely privileged, because from the time that I learned what had happened to my grandfather, my desire was to honor him and to be able to in some way just remember him who had been forgotten by our whole society. And so what I'm hoping for is that the legislature will see fit to continue this funding for this project so that all of these people, there's 897 graves in this cemetery alone that need markers and someone to remember them and to know that, that these people had worth and that they had value, and that that regardless of what their reason was for being there, regardless of what their degree of difficulty that they struggled with, that they still had value, and that, that we could recognize that for these people. And so I just would humbly ask for the legislature to continue this, this funding so that the rest of these people can receive markers for their graves there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this certainly is a very emotional and I think a very meaningful project for all the people who have been involved and for the state of Minnesota. You said that you wanted to continue the funding. Have you been getting state funding up till now, or is this a first-time appropriation from the legislature? And who has been, I mean, I'm amazed at what has already been accomplished, and who has been doing that funding? And will they continue to participate? I mean, this seems like something that the whole state and all these organizations have been very involved with. So could you give me more background on the funding stream so far?
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Yes, there are institutions, they're state institutions, and so we have that obligation. I have Jim will also comment on that. We've been receiving funding since 1997, incremental funding. Anything else that you
want
to add?
Did you want to read this question?
Did that answer your question?
No. Have you been getting, is it from the Department of Human Services, have you been getting funding, or is this all outside of the legislature?
Yes. My name
if
is
you can state your name for
Jim Bassett-Carman, with Advocating Change Together, and staff person for the Remembering with Dignity project. And the legislature has funded Remembering with Dignity three times in the past, in 1997, and in 2001, and in 2006. And so the funding we're currently working on will have used it by the when we place the markers this summer in Hastings and St. Peter in Rochester. So this bill will be for continued funding beginning after this legislative session to continue the project into the future.
Thank you.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fritz, for bringing this bill back in front of us, and testifiers for taking the time to come up here. For members that are new to the committee, I remember 2001, that was my first freshman year, and I was like, okay. I did not realize how much it was going to cost and how many individuals that we have overlooked as a state and chose to just act like their existence wasn't as relevant or as important as every one of the rest of us, pretty much. You know, one of the things that we know will die one day, and to be able to be remembered and cherished with having a stone just to say your name to me is very important. So I do thank you for your work. And Representative Fritz, this things have grown, because this is not what it looked like just 6 years ago. We didn't have a pamphlet, and we didn't have this organized. It was organized, but it wasn't as put together as we see now. And so the growth that you guys have done is amazing, and I hope that we do find a couple dollars so that the work can continue.
Thank you, Representative Walker. Chairman Hodge, I just have one more letter, and I will be brief. I'm going to just point it out to you. You all have it in your packet, and this is from Jim Stenson from St. Peter, Minnesota, and he asked that you all take a look and read that today, and I won't read it to you, but hopefully you will read it. And we also now have a demonstration. We have a couple of the markers to show you, and Jim is going to give his testimony.
We just have one more question, Representative Abler.
Thanks, and just to kind of piggyback on what Mr. Walker was saying, that this is an example where we have a bill because it wasn't so popular in the department or somewhere where they had to just tell them that it was important to us. And so sometimes it makes sense to do that. And this has been actually quite controversial,
mm-hmm.
at least in certain circles. And I'm glad we're having a nice hearing in the House, and that's actually movement ahead, too.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if somebody could tell me why September 30th, 2008 is such a significant day. It seems like an odd date to put in for the end of the funding for this. And I'm wondering if there's a reason why that date's in there as opposed to some other.
Well, I don't know about the exact date, but I can speak a little bit to this. Our intention is that this, we have received both funds. The initial two appropriations were from the general fund. The appropriation in 2006 was from bonding dollars. And there was, because of ins and outs of 1 year, there was no bonding year and no bonding bill. And we kind of are out of that, and we were sort of steered in the direction of going towards a general fund appropriation this year. But our intention is next year to go back and try, with the full amount that you have in your packet there of a little bit over $2 million, that we estimate it would take to complete all unmarked graves around the state of Minnesota, minus what might be appropriated with this bill, and get back into the bonding cycle in order to use bonding dollars to complete this project. That's sort of where we have been advised to the best way to go about state funding for this project. So this month funding is kind of seen as a bridge until the bonding bill next year. And the end of the summer is when the monument companies finish their work in terms of putting headstones into the ground. And so that's kind of where the end of the DHS grant that ACT is working on currently ends the end of September this year. And so it was a year from then. Yes.
Thank you. I promise we'll get to your testimony. We just have one more question. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I just need to follow up. Now, this is my first time of hearing this, and I don't have any background data at all here. So these are questions that I would like to have answers to, just so that I can explain to constituents, you know, what the dollars are for. You said you're getting a funding stream, you know, from bonding and from the Department of Human Services, and I see on the sheet a number of groups that are supporting. Are they also participating in providing some funding? Are you getting any private matches, I guess is what I'm saying, or is this all state funding? That's my first question. And then do you have staff? If so, how many who are working on this, or is it all volunteers?
Well, there's Remembering with Dignity is a coalition of disability advocacy organizations around Minnesota, some with a few self-advocates and others like United Way in Hastings, which is the largest organization there, and then there's a kind of a patchwork of different groups coming together in Rochester. Remembering with Dignity gets individual donations from families who are supportive. Advocating Change Together gets larger foundation grants to support the project. However, we couldn't do this without state funding, and we feel strongly that it's a state responsibility to pay for the headstones that the state originally placed with numbered graves, so to replace the numbered markers with a name and a date of birth and a date of death. The group in Rochester has been doing some good fundraising. They got several two large donations of about $10,000 just recently this fall. So there is some private fundraising happening, but certainly we're not in a capacity to do the kind of money, raise the kind of money that would take to mark all the graves. And then the organization part, you asked about there are many different organizations are kind of pooling together, and their ACT provides one staff person dedicated towards this project.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair? So you basically have in-kind staff. You don't hire staff to work on this. It's all in-kind volunteer staff?
Yes. Well, remember, with Advocating Change Together, it's the staff person for the Remembering with Dignity project, but everybody else is volunteers around the state. All the other groups are volunteering to work.
Okay, so you have one paid staff person from the organization. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. Just one more. I'll add one more thing. As the cost estimate for 8,724 graves at approximately $250 is $2,181,000. So there's a lot of work to do. So I'm going to turn it over to Jim now, who has his presentation.
Well, let me just, I know we're in the interest of time. I have two of the numbered markers here. These are the smaller ones. Most of them around the state are cement blocks, the size of a cinder block, roughly, with a number stamped in the top. In Rochester, it's basically a coffee can filled with cement with a number. These two are from the Willmar State Hospital Cemetery. Number 282 is Andrew Forsberg, who was born in 1866 and died January 5th, 1942. You can pass it around, sure. The original, the first several hundred markers were these large kind of railroad tie stakes that were used. The latter people buried in the Oak Knoll Cemetery in Willmar received a wooden stake with a small little metal tag that has a number 569 on it here, and it says the state of Minnesota on the top. This is what was used. This is the grave marker for May Esther Hauer, number 569, born 1899, died March 29th of 1957. These markers, when we first saw the Willmar State Hospital Cemetery, it was a field of grass with an old chain link fence around it. We didn't know that there were markers there. When the monument company started to dig into the sod to put the named markers down, this is what was unearthed. And I think many of them, I mean, it used to be a spot where kids would drive pickups up to and go party at night, and so many of them probably got thrown in the lake, but we have several boxes of those from what was found by the monument company when they were doing their work. In other cemeteries with the numbered markers that are still in the ground visible in Faribault and elsewhere, we hope to leave them, at least some of them, for historical reference so that people, when they go to visit these cemeteries and when they're improved, that they can see what how the state of Minnesota remembered people who were institutionalized here. Yes?
Can I ask something?
Sure.
Please. Down in Hastings, where Earl's got his grandfather buried, at the cemetery itself, there's some of them has, you know, like numbers that you really can't see and are hard to find. And some of them are so far down, you gotta use your hands or something to dig in there and find out if there is something there. So that's what I have done, you know, on a few trips back, that there is some there that you just can't see, and there might be some that you just can't dig. You know, and the last time we had an outing down there, you know, a ceremony we had with Jim, and we looked around the cemetery, and there's some of them that you just can't find, but there is people buried there. It's just you just can't find the number, and they're so hard to find, and they are lined up. It's just hard to find them, but they're there. I just want to express my experience with it.
Yeah, one of the larger pieces of the project is to identify who these people are, and the research that it takes initially to discover who these people are, get their exact names and dates, is a big chunk of the work before we get to the point where we're actually having a ceremony and placing named markers into the ground. In the interest of time, we have placed approximately 2,500 named grave markers so far. By the end of this summer, another 1,500 will be installed, so that'll bring to about 4,000 named headstones in state cemeteries. That's approximately one-third of the project. So, and as I mentioned, we received state funding in the past, but it has been slow and infrequent, and we would hope that the legislature would increase the amount of money appropriated and increase the frequency with which it's appropriated so this project can complete itself. And So I just want to encourage you to support this project. Really appreciate the time listening and open for questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Fritz, any last comments?
Well, unless there's any questions, then it's them. I thank you, members, and I know this to me is very emotional. I worked at the Faribault State School and Hospital my first year out of nurses training, and actually had no idea that the cemetery was that close. And then further on in my life as a 4-H member, happened upon the knowledge that they did exist. And then coming here to the legislature, I found out about this program and these great people who are remembering with dignity, and I ask you to join us and support this bill so we can all feel better about the folks that died in our state institutions. Thank you.
I just want to thank all the testifiers for coming today. It's very important. I think, basic human nature should say that nobody should be treated as a number, and especially those that are in the care of the state of Minnesota. So thank you for taking the time out of your day today. If there's no further discussion or questions, House File 760 will be laid over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And thank you.
Thank you very much.
And with that being said, we are adjourned.